You are Locked On Ravens, your daily Baltimore Ravens podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And we are back with another episode of Locked On Ravens. I am your host, Kevin Ostreicher of Ravens Wire, and we are back here. It is Taco Tuesday, a playoff victory. Taco Tuesday, and back with us to digest the Ravens 20-13 win over the Tennessee Titans, as well as get into a mini preview of the Bills matchup with Baltimore in the divisional round, is Spencer Schultz of Baltimore Beatdown. Spencer, Lamar Jackson gets his first playoff win. The Ravens get their first playoff win since the 2014-2015 season. How are you doing today?
Doing fantastic. This game feels like another part of the movie that is the Baltimore Ravens 2020-2021 season. The narratives, the COVID situation that went on earlier in the year, the up and the down, you know, losing in a monsoon, and then having to play, you know, your triple A or your quadruple A squad against Pittsburgh, and basically having to go at least 10-6. You can really only lose to the Giants over the final stretch. You can't lose any AFC games, it turned out. The Ravens go on a run, trail early in the game, and end up getting taking care of business, adjusting. There were beautiful adjustments after the Ravens went down 10-0, and you really have to end up putting the game. One of the biggest play of the game, especially in the first half for me early on, is Lamar Jackson has Adoree Jackson have a three-point closeout kind of blitz, trying to see if he can just force some panic for Lamar, make Lamar panic. He does not. He buys time. He rolls out. He stiff arms. Mark Andrews finds space, then works back to Lamar on 3rd-and-7. Lamar finds him. And from there, it was pretty smooth sailing. That would have been a devastating punt to punt the ball back there at the end of the first quarter, not giving the defense a ton of time to make adjustments after letting up, you know, a touchdown. And Ryan Tannehill's really picking you apart a little bit with A.J. Brown. And from then on, then out, the Ravens end up going on a 20-3 run and winning the game. And as you said, Kevin, advancing for the first time since that 2015 season, 2014-2015 season, and feels good. It feels like the monkey's off of the Ravens' back. They played a brand of football that we haven't seen from this defense against a tough opponent, against a potent offense all year. They're finally healthy for the first time in a long, long time, really since I think that Chiefs game early on, and things are clicking now. The first time you get to see Jimmy Smith and Yannick Ngakoue and Calais Campbell and Brandon Williams and everybody else. So the defense is clicking right now. They really held down the fort, and it was a beautiful thing to see.
It was absolutely a beautiful thing to see. And just seeing how the Ravens fought back from going down 10-0, people were counting them out. You know, people were saying the Ravens are dead. This is, you know, they can't come back. They did come back. And Spencer, I want to start by asking you about Lamar Jackson, because this was a big moment for him, his first playoff victory, completing 17 of 24 passes for 179 yards, did have that interception early, and then he also had 16 carries for 136 yards and a score on the ground. So, Spencer, when you watch Lamar Jackson early, obviously he throws that interception, and he's probably down on himself a bit, but he never lets that affect him. He comes back, he plays the next series, he plays the next play, and he turns in a really good performance. So what did you see out of Lamar Jackson? What adjustments did he make, and how did he lead this Ravens offense to victory?
Well, that interception you mentioned, in my opinion, I've rewatched it, not a ton, but I've now looked at it on tape, and it was the worst throw of Lamar Jackson's career, especially since the beginning of 2019, where his rookie year, he's kind of thrown into the fire. There are some underthrows and things, but considering the circumstances, considering that, you know, Boykin was a little bit open, that Hollywood was, you know, pretty open next to that, next to each other. Jackson had time to get the ball off while Rashawn Evans does start to really come down the barrel at one point there. Jackson just doesn't square his shoulders up. His toes are pointing one way, his shoulders pointing the other way. The ball comes out in a funky arm angle because of it, and he throws up a duck. It was a horrible throw. It was a horribly inaccurate throw, and it was really disappointing. And, of course, that sends, you know, Ravens fans into an absolute panic afterwards. Oh no, this is happening again. You know, the Ravens are down and yada, 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 yada. And to see him come back out, I think Greg Roman really understood how to get him back into a rhythm. And after that, it just kind of felt a little bit like Lamar was, you know, maybe goes to the sideline and he's like, well, I try to be perfect. Maybe I'm pressing a little bit and taking and forcing some things that aren't there. And the passing game hadn't gotten started yet, and maybe he says, you know what, whatever, let's just play. I'm just going to let loose. I'm not going to worry about it. The body language of the team didn't get down after that the way it did last year. They knew what they had in front of them. The defense played really, really, really tough, even on the Titans' touchdown drive. It was really just A.J. Brown making a couple spectacular catches and really well-placed throws. So the Titans weren't able to keep executing on that side of the ball. They were basically being forced to be pretty perfect most of the game and were not obviously able to. But Jackson really hunkered down. He ends up throwing a beautiful concept, and it was really smart the entire game of Greg Roman. Obviously, the Ravens like to run that quarterback bash where the two pullers go with Lamar Jackson and the running back attacks the other way to the outside by themselves. And, of course, the Titans are going to be preparing for that. We want to take the bash away. We need to worry about the bash. That has been how the Ravens are on this five-game win streak. They had a couple good runs against the Titans with it back in their Week 11 November matchup. And, of course, the Titans are prepared for that. So what does Greg Roman do? Starts running play action off of it. Starts using different wrinkles of it. Does a lot of great things. And that's how you end up seeing a beautiful throw, one of Lamar Jackson's better throws of his career, on a slot fade to Hollywood Brown while the Ravens were just in pass pro, but you see J.K. Dobbins come in motion from the slot. Of course the Titans are going to start thinking that's happening. They show that they're in man coverage. You have Hollywood Brown in pretty tight in a slot alignment while there wasn't a receiver outside of him. He was in the slot area of the field and could just run a beautiful slot fade. Lamar lays one over his shoulder, an outstanding throw. And from that point forward, it felt like he was much more under control. He had control of the ball again in the way he was throwing it. And just executed. From there on out, there were no more egregious errors. He took care of the ball. And the biggest adjustment was just the Titans were giving the Ravens underneath throws. So they took them. Just take them. Take what the defense gives you. Lamar Jackson did just that. And that is how you win in the playoffs. That is how Tom Brady has won 6 Super Bowls. He takes what they give him in the playoffs. Whatever you want to give Tom Brady, he takes it. And who does Lamar Jackson always say, you know, who is the quarterback he wants to be like? Tom Brady. So he took a step in getting there, taking what the defense gives him.
Yeah, it was an overall great performance for Lamar Jackson. Obviously not perfect, but he did come back. He did play the next play after that interception, and he led this team to victory, made a lot of nice plays by himself. At one point, you know, you see that touchdown run. He's like, you know what? I'm just going to do it myself. I'm going to get this team back in the game. The defense played the lights out. We'll talk about that in the second segment. But this game, how Lamar Jackson responded to a mistake that he made, is the true atmosphere of what a team is to a quarterback. It's, you know, he wants to stand up for his guys. He wants to go out there and win for his guys. It's not about Lamar Jackson. It's about his team. And so for Lamar Jackson to go out there and prove that he is a leader, that he can come back from mistakes, that he can bring a Baltimore Ravens team back from a deficit, that was a really key point that Lamar Jackson made on Sunday. But Spencer, the Ravens' run game, 35 carries for 236 yards, 6.7 yards per carry, and 2 scores. But it seemed like early on the Titans were sealing the edges. They weren't letting Ravens rushers get to those edges. They were shooting gaps well. And then over the course of the game, Baltimore begins to get those chunk plays, although the Titans did do a decently good job at defending the Ravens' run game. So over the course of the game, Spencer, what did Greg Roman do differently from a play call perspective to help Baltimore get going on the ground?
Well, he really started bringing it. It feels like Roman's plan going into this one. They look at those 2 losses to the Titans and they say, what did we leave on the table? What are the Titans not doing well? What are the Titans giving the Ravens? And they give you the quick underneath passing game, and they prefer to stuff the run up the middle and let you run to the outside. And I think that the Ravens offensive line got better throughout the game for sure. That was one aspect. But Greg Roman's general idea was, all right, let's run some really tight formations, some really tight alignments where everybody's in towards the center of the field. That gets the Titans their response, for whatever reason it is, their response is to play a really soft cover 3 or cover 4 shell. They give a ton of space to the sideline. So then you start seeing Marquise Brown on some speed outs. You start seeing Pat Ricard get incorporated underneath with a couple of really big catch and runs. They were huge, 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 huge. And just using those flats a little bit. And that starts working the Titans defense side to side. They then have to come up. The linebackers are starting to really worry about the sidelines and getting to the sidelines, thus opening things up for that bash option for the runs over the middle of the field. And then from there on out, it was much more smooth sailing overall. And the Titans did do a good job containing the Ravens' run game, and I hate to say this, but I hate when people say, you know, take away the big run and then look at what they did, because, of course, the big run happened. But Lamar Jackson has two runs. One's very late in the game after the interception, the one where he slides and the game's over. He points up at Kevin Byard, ha, ha, ha. And, of course, the long scramble. Other than those two, you know, Titans held the Ravens relatively in check. I would compare that almost to the Ravens' run defense's performance against Derrick Henry in Week 11. You know, they held it relatively in check. There were a couple of modest runs, then a couple really big ones. And so the Titans didn't really terribly lose that battle. Lamar's scramble wasn't a designed run. But in situational football, like I mentioned, one of the big plays of the game, especially in the first half, getting back into the mix, was a 3rd-and-2 conversion from Gus Edwards, where the Ravens come out in 22 personnel. They have a heavy set. It's 3rd-and-2. So what are the Titans going to do? They're going to match. They're going to bring in their linebackers and their big guys. They're going to put 4 DBs out. And what does Greg Roman do? He then spreads the formation out. He has Eric Tomlinson split out wide, I believe, to the field, and then has Mark Andrews in the slot, Pat Ricard lined up, I believe, at tight end. And Gus Edwards doesn't run the bash. It's usually J.K. Dobbins. A lot of the time, it's J.K. Dobbins. There's a much higher percentage of runs of that nature with J.K. Dobbins. So when you see the heavy personnel come in, you see Gus Edwards come in, Titans are thinking, all right, they're going to try and, you know, shove the ball up the middle, up the A-gap, and let Gus Edwards do what he does best, convert in power run situations. Nope, the Ravens spread them out instead and hand the ball to Gus Edwards. He has a one-on-one, and I like Gus Edwards in a one-on-one with a DB, especially. 10 times out of 10, Gus makes Kenny Vaccaro miss, picks up a first down. It was just things like that, starting to put the Titans on their toes a little bit, mix up the personnel and then the play. Running plays out of personnel and out of alignments that are uncommon, tendency breakers. That's due to self-scouting. You know, that's the chess of football. What do we think the Titans are going to want to take away? The bash, of course. They want to take away the middle of the field. How can we run the bash out of an unlikely personnel or alignment or player and have it execute? And that was one example of it. I thought this was a brilliant game from Greg Roman. A brilliant, brilliant game from Greg Roman. The tight alignments work so well. Marquise Brown, he starts using him. And Ravens fans for a long time have said, you know, why don't the Ravens use Marquise Brown more like the Chiefs use Tyreek Hill? That was a comp for Marquise Brown coming out, of course. While Hill is a little bit more of a spectacular athlete, Hollywood is maybe a little bit more of a technically refined route runner, whatever. But we haven't seen Marquise Brown breaking tackles, making cuts, fighting. So they start bringing Marquise Brown in motion, in orbit motion, circling back and then getting into the backfield, turning the other way. You flip the ball to him. He gets a one-on-one and just cuts right upfield on someone, converts an easy first down, things like that. And that was, I mean, that part of the offense opened things up so much. Marquise Brown getting yacked. We saw it with a stiff arm in Week 17. I think that was like the first real taste of what Marquise Brown did at Oklahoma. He was a monster after the catch at Oklahoma. The foot injury, of course, you know, him being a little undersized, he put some weight on. Feels like he's been pretty tentative all year, but playoff Marquise, a.k.a. Primetime Jet, came out to play. And for me, he was a huge factor in winning this game. Working over the middle of the field, huge catches on third down, huge catches on the sideline, picking up yards after the catch, you know. Being able to use him and make defenses really fear him wherever he's lined up opens up so, so, so much for this Ravens team. So I thought that there was a great job by Greg Roman in the run game, incorporating those guys and getting Hollywood Brown involved as a ancillary part to the run game. Throwing short passes to the outside is an extension of the run game. And that's something that, you know, people who don't like the run, the analytics community always says, you know, the short passing game is an extension of the run. And I agree to a certain extent. Of course, if you can just throw a unencumbered 5-yard out and let a player go get 7-8 yards, there's no defender there. It's a relatively easy throw. It's like a handoff, you know, it's a 15-yard handoff, 20-yard handoff throw in terms of throw distance. So seeing the Ravens able to competently attack the sideline in the passing game underneath, that makes this offense indefensible. That has been the limitation of this offense. It took a lot of time, it felt like, to get there. But to see it come together, as well as the defense come together at the same time, was a thing of beauty. And I like that Greg Roman took the low-hanging fruit and made the best of it. So it was an overall great game from the offense after they were trailing, not panicking, continuing to try and be methodical and make sure you're sustaining long drives, giving the defense time. And it really all started out with that rollout from Lamar Jackson, like I mentioned, able to find Mark Andrews, the biggest catch of Mark Andrews' career by far, in my opinion. On that sideline and moving the chains and getting the Ravens into the second quarter and giving them a little time to make those adjustments. So it was a thing of beauty, and this Ravens offense is scary right now.
The Ravens offense is scary right now, and the big part of it is the Ravens they're letting the run game help the pass game and the pass game help the run game. Greg Roman being able to spread out that Tennessee defense. You mentioned the plays in the flat, you know, Patrick Ricard making a big impact. Playoff Marquise Brown is real, by the way. I agree with you, Spencer. Showed up in the Titans game last year, showed up in the Titans game on Sunday this year. So the Ravens have plenty of talent on offense. Obviously, it's all led by Lamar Jackson, but you can't just account for Lamar Jackson's legs and be okay. There's so much more to the Ravens offense. There's so much more to Lamar Jackson. And with this Ravens offense, with how they're playing right now, they're about as dangerous as anybody in the league. But we're going to head into our first break. And when we return, we'll be talking about the Ravens defense and how they held Ryan Tannehill and that Titans offense to just 13 points. So stay tuned for that. And we'll be right back. The NFL regular season is finished and the playoffs have begun. There's only one place that has you covered and one place we trust, betonline.ag. Sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag and use the promo code LOCKEDON for your 50% welcome bonus. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore, get in on the action. Don't forget to use that promo code LOCKEDON to receive a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. And we return with our second segment of this Locked On Ravens Taco Tuesday edition episode. Kevin Ostreicher still here with Spencer Schultz of Baltimore Beatdown. And Spencer, when you look at this Ravens defensive performance in Baltimore's 20-13 win against the Titans in the AFC wildcard round here, the defense, the big storyline, holding Derrick Henry to just 2.2 yards per carry, 18 carries for 40 yards. The Titans team as a whole only averaged 2.3 yards per carry on the ground. This was a monumental effort from the Ravens front seven, secondary members coming up and making plays on Derrick Henry, holding Ryan Tannehill's legs in check, an overall phenomenal defensive performance for the Baltimore Ravens. But let's start with the run defense, Spencer. How did they do it? How did they limit Derrick Henry to just 2.2 yards on the ground?
Well, you get Calais Campbell back and you get Brandon Williams back against a team like the Titans that they don't have a complicated run game. They're not running the way that the Ravens are, using different guys, using different run concepts. They like to run zone. They mix some counter in there from time to time, but they like to just run zone. And what zone does is it gets defensive linemen and offensive linemen on the move, trying to get Derrick Henry to find a seam. And once he gets a head full of steam, he can make you pay. But the Ravens did not give him that. The Ravens' defensive front, their outside linebackers and defensive linemen were beasts in this game. Guy that hasn't gotten a ton of attention yet, but Justin Madubuike didn't play a ton. He was in rotation, made a couple really violent plays up front. He was able to snake through some combo blocks and be explosive. Pernell McPhee, obviously, you know, maybe the MVP of this game, and especially in stopping Derrick Henry. He just had such a veteran understanding of responsibility, of the edge, of violence, of physicality, of being under control, how to close out, when to close out, how much depth to gain to make sure that he's not getting beaten by bootlegs and closing out against Derrick Henry. He had two beautiful push pulls on the edge play side where they tried to attack him on the outside. He just shocked his blocker, grabbed their jersey and ripped them to the ground. That is a legal move. When you do it between the pads and you're both square, the push-pull is my favorite move in football. It's what my lanky little self used to use when I was playing football when I hadn't filled out yet because I had long arms. So I'd get into those pads and pull guys down under their face mask. He used that to perfection. We saw Malik Harrison with a handful of really nice run stuffs, but Calais Campbell and Brandon Williams made an absolute menace up front. Brandon Williams controlled the center all game long. He is not a three tech. The Ravens started playing him at three tech. He's the richest nose tackle in the history of football. And they're like, oh, we have Michael Pierce. He's kind of good. Let's start sticking Brandon Williams, who is a fire hydrant, at the three tech. No, you need someone explosive or someone long like Madubuike or Wolf. And those guys both played huge factors. But Calais Campbell absolutely wrecked guys into the hole time and time again. When it was play side for him, he was not going anywhere. He was blowing stuff up, making Derrick Henry have to cut back so that guys like Matt Judon and guys like Pernell McPhee could come backside and clean the play up. We saw Patrick Queen have another up-and-down day, which he has, but he made a couple really nice plays, one of which the Titans lined up in an ace right. That's two tight ends on the right, and they run a counter. The Ravens kind of over-aligned to the two tight ends. There was a two-gap backside hole, and it worked to perfection. The Titans have a beautiful hole. And there is, I believe, either the center or the left guard is trying to reach Patrick Queen. He quickly identifies it. He starts to stay balanced but gather himself towards the hole. As a combo blocker tries to get him, he slips his shoulder underneath, launches at Derrick Henry in the backfield. Derrick Henry had to jump cut like 6 feet out of the way, which allowed Malik Harrison to come up and hit him. And then He kind of ricocheted off of Harrison and stayed up. But that by that time, the Ravens defense was able to corral Henry. It was like a 5-yard run, which was one of his longest on the day. But that just goes to show how good the Ravens front was playing, that it took two missed tackles from two linebackers for Derrick Henry to get 5 yards. And so I think that just playing sound team defense, trusting guys on the front side to do their responsibility, trusting guys on the back side to do their responsibility, just do what your assignment is. Trust the guys on your defense, and you'll make the play. And when you have guys like Brandon Williams and Calais Campbell that are wrecking up front, Derek Wolf really controlling blockers as well, just a total group effort up front. And the safeties did a good job, too, filling in and getting down when they needed to. Deshaun Elliott, all game long in both the run and the pass, he was moving through the frame like, you know, Ray Lewis almost, where you would see kind of the play is going on and everybody's kind of going half speed trying to get to their assignment. And you just see someone enter the frame so quickly, you don't really know who it is. And Deshaun Elliott is becoming one of those guys where you know that it's him because he's a blur on the screen. He is coming downhill fast, hard, hitting, ending plays. He's a finisher. He had a really outstanding game. I thought Chuck Clark played well, too, but wasn't a huge factor in the run. And when you have got a corner like Marlon Humphrey who's getting physical when the receivers are in tight alignments and getting really physical, shedding blocks, just a total group effort up front and stuffed Derrick Henry. The Ravens were tired of it. They're tired. They went and traded for Calais Campbell. You know, they extended LJ Ford. They brought in Derek Wolf. You draft Queen. You draft Harrison. All these guys. You bring McPhee back. Judon, you franchise tag him. You trade for Yannick Ngakoue. All these guys. You know, you keep Jihad Ward as well. They finally get all of them in a game against the Titans, and that was the result. 18 carries, 40 yards, his lowest total in quite some time. I know it was the first time under 50 yards since, I believe, October of 2018. So completely stuffed Henry up front.
Yeah, Baltimore did a phenomenal job at really taking Derrick Henry out of this game. Henry was frustrated. You could see on the sideline, they showed a couple clips of him with Mike Vrabel, and he just looked utterly frustrated. And that's the key. The Ravens went out. They got Calais Campbell exactly for a game like this. Not having him in that first game earlier in the season, that was a huge blow. And then not having Brandon Williams on top of it, it was a lot of talent not to have for stopping arguably the best running back in the NFL this season. So for the Ravens to be able to stop him, to take him out is a threat. That helped the rest of the defense stop Ryan Tannehill and company. And Spencer, someone who I know the Ravens were very happy to have back on Sunday, cornerback Jimmy Smith, someone who had missed the last couple of games with an injury. He's been injury prone throughout his career, but when he's on the field, he is such a key piece of this Ravens defense, kind of like Brandon Williams in a way. But A.J. Brown starts torching the Ravens early. Marlon Humphrey, not his best day. But the Ravens make the adjustments. Don Martindale makes the adjustments. So what did Don Martindale do to stifle Ryan Tannehill and A.J. Brown, and how did he use Jimmy Smith to do it?
Well, the first thing that I love from Wink Martindale's game plan is that Ryan Tannehill is not – I don't want to say that he can't read the field. That's not what my point is. But he is a much better one-read, rely on ball placement and accuracy quarterback than he is a guy who can scan second and third reads consistently. That's why play action is such a heavy part. Of course, Derrick Henry helps, but Tannehill's best attribute is ball placement. And when you start bluffing and taking throws underneath away, using Yannick Ngakoue, using Tyus Bowser, using Matt Judon, and bluffing, we see a big sack as a result from Derek Wolf, that huge, monstrously, you know, important sack on third down, because Tyus Bowser, who, by the way, for my money, drops off of the line of scrimmage and takes clean, precise, textbook, clinic tape, 45-degree angles to where he's supposed to go, and took away primary reads underneath a few times. The Ravens weren't out of place in coverage all game other than one pick play that gets Marlon Humphrey lost in like a 5-man scrum, and Patrick Queen doesn't quite pick up on what's happening, and you get the long catch and run from Ferkser. But think about the big plays A.J. Brown even made on Marlon Humphrey. Marlon Humphrey was on top of him. You know, A.J. Brown had to freaking club Marlon Humphrey to get him off once. So it was a beautiful thing to see for the Ravens to just be in the right place all game long. Yes, of course, A.J. Brown does start to get some separation. He did actually have a crossing route over the middle where he pushed it off a little bit and out-physicaled Marlon yet again. But I was saying when we were offline, I mean, if you look at a silhouette of Jimmy Smith and a silhouette of A.J. Brown, they're like the same person. They have the exact same body type. They had a similar combine. Of course, Jimmy's, you know, in his 10th year, but at this point, he understands how to take a guy's speed away. He has always been strong. He is just as big, just as strong as A.J. Brown. It was a great matchup for him. A.J. Brown can't bully Jimmy Smith. No one has ever bullied Jimmy Smith physically. He is one of the strongest cornerbacks to ever play in the NFL. He's huge. He has good speed as well, of course, but A.J. Brown couldn't push him around, couldn't make those kinds of plays, and it ends up being a great result. And it was important that Wink Martindale understood, hey, you know, Tannehill's got unreal ball placement. He's making some crazy wild throws, dropping it in the bucket. And Marlon Humphrey can't fight off A.J. Brown, but they start giving some more too high looks. And I think that generally once the Ravens started to realize, okay, we're winning up front. You know, we are dominating at the point of attack. The line of scrimmage belongs to us. Then you can kind of have the safeties play off a little bit, start giving some more help. The weak side guys away from the play don't have to worry about the run as much. It doesn't have to be this entire 11-man effort to stop Henry. When you're really confident in what your defensive front is doing, the rotation was heavy with the outside linebackers. Judon played 30 snaps, and everybody else, you know, Ngakoue, McPhee, Bowser, they all had, and Ward all had 20-something snaps. So those guys were in a constant rotation. Everybody was fresh. Everybody was winning at the point of contact. Justin Ellison spelled Brandon Williams effectively, especially after, you know, Ellis hasn't had the greatest year, but he is a backup guy, and he had to play some starter snaps. He's going to be a little bit better. He's going to have some more experience, have his feet under him a little better. So those two guys were Brandon Williams is the only guy that really didn't come out a ton, but Ellis did spell him quite a bit. Calais Campbell and Pernell McPhee, I think, played 30 snaps and 20 snaps, respectively. 50 total snaps from those two. Felt like they played 1,000. Every single time they're on the field, they made a play. And that just helps your secondary overall. And Corey Davis was just a non-factor in this game. The Ravens took him out of the game. They really got burnt last time. So Marcus Peters did a great job just staying in phase. Peters did have an ankle last time they played that plagued him. And it felt like Peters got to sit out a couple weeks, rest that ankle up for the first time, didn't have to rely on him, and got him back healthy. So with Peters, with Smith, with Marlon, having guys like Anthony Averett and Tremont Williams that are, you know, 4 and 5 corners, but they had to play some cornerback 2 and some cornerback 3 snaps, so they're ready to go. It's nothing new for them. It gives you confidence overall. Just that general health of this team, the ability to rotate, plays a huge, huge part. But the only guys who didn't rotate were Marlon Humphrey, Marcus Peters, Deshaun Elliott, and Chuck Clark. And Clark had an awesome game to me. He got targeted a couple times, let up a couple catches underneath, but he was always right in position, gathered, balanced, making the tackle, closing out, never out of place. And that's the best way for me to describe the two safeties, Deshaun Elliott and Chuck Clark. They are rarely out of place in coverage. They don't blow coverages. They know where they're supposed to be. They're conservative in that way. But when you've got cornerbacks like Marlon Humphrey and Jimmy Smith and Marcus Peters, you can afford to just execute your assignment, not have to play superhero ball, and let those guys go to work. So, again, just a total team effort. But Jimmy Smith turned off A.J. Brown's water after a huge first quarter from A.J. Brown. And that's just smart, you know. Jimmy Smith matches up better with him. He's a bigger guy. Marlon's not quite physical enough. Plus, then that allows you to put Marlon kind of back in the box where he's been playing, and he's kind of used to playing right now, and start blitzing, start being really physical in the slot, doing those kinds of things. So overall, good adjustments. Turned out really well. And it started up front. Again, with that front 7, you can rely on them. Let your DBs cover. And that's what the Ravens did.
Yeah, absolutely. Jimmy Smith was just such an X factor in this one. And Spencer, I know we talked about Marcus Peters and his injury when he was sitting out those games. I thought that time that he missed to be able to heal was so key because he was dealing with that lower leg injury for I don't even know how many weeks, but it was clearly affecting his ability to play football. So the Ravens having that easier back half of their schedule, they're able to rest some of their players and get them back when it matters in the playoffs. And it's really been helping them, and it helped them on Sunday. But we're going to head into our final break now, and when we return, we'll be diving into a bit of a mini preview for this divisional round matchup between the Ravens and the Bills. So stay tuned for that, and we'll be back soon. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it's now impossible to stock all the parts you need into a traditional chain storefront. Why endure off from pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning and wait while the counterman orders the parts on his computer, choosing only the brand his warehouse happens to carry? You have computers with access to rockauto.com at home and in your pocket. The rockauto.com catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brand, specifications, and prices you prefer. So go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Right locked on in there, how'd you hear about us box, so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Rockauto.com. We are back here with our final segment of this Taco Tuesday Locked On Ravens Edition episode. Kevin Ostrich, your host, still here with Spencer Schultz of Baltimore Beatdown. And Spencer, the Ravens traveling to Buffalo on Saturday night to take on the Bills, a team that has been phenomenal this season. And when you look at the game from 2019, 24-17 Baltimore wins. Josh Allen completes 17 of 39 passes. Lamar Jackson, 16 of 25. The Ravens come out on top. When you look at these two teams from what they were in 2019 to where they are now in 2020, what has changed for both of them?
Well, the first thing that's changed is that Josh Allen is endlessly accurate deep. He is a much better deep ball thrower than he has been at any point throughout his young NFL career. A world of difference jump this offseason to, you know, this season to last season. He put in the work. He goes with Jordan Palmer, and they got him right. He is making all the throws downfield. He was the least accurate deep ball passer, the most inaccurate deep ball passer in the NFL last year. Always off target. The lowest percentage of catchable balls by a mile over 20 yards. And people want to try to say that's because of Stephon Diggs, and I don't agree with that. I think that Josh Allen put in the work, got his mechanics all the way right, his throwing angle, his timing, his touch, his trajectory, and it's just accurate. I think if you take Stephon Diggs out of this game, of course, you know, the Bills won't play as well. They would love to have Diggs, but if you were to take him out of the game, he's still going to hit throws, be more accurate over top. That helps this offense a ton. It's the Josh Allen show. Their run game is, you know, it's all right. They're able to get some first downs, run in some power situations, get first downs, score some touchdowns when they need to. But Josh Allen's the most dangerous runner on their team because of his, you know, big, strong build, like almost Cam Newton, able to make plays like that. And I think that Josh Allen's just taking the leap. Their defense is not as good as it was last year, to be honest. They miss a couple guys. They had a guy, big name, retire. They also missed Star Tulalele. And their secondary remains really, really strong. And in a game where this might be played in the snow, that secondary, that Bills secondary, while they do come up and make plays in the run, they are incredible on the back end. They are great. Poyer and Hyde are probably the best safety tandem in the NFL. Tre'Davious White, a top-shelf corner as well. Josh Norman, a guy who's kind of almost reminds you of a Malcolm Butler, a guy who had a really great year and made some incredible plays. And Malcolm Butler makes a play in the Super Bowl, and then their careers kind of got derailed, but Josh Norman's playing okay again. He's the beatable one, though, still. Out there in Buffalo, their linebackers and their pass rush is disciplined, but they don't, you know, they don't impress you overall. They're not an X factor. They're not really coming in hot. They do play disciplined as a unit. They've got some really balanced football players. Matt Milano makes a huge difference in the box. Tremaine Edmonds, incredible athlete, but last year, you know, the Ravens weren't crazy threatened by the Bills front seven, and their front seven is really not, you know, a unit that strikes fear into you. And then comparing the Ravens from that matchup last year, you know, that was a game where Lamar throws three touchdowns. He's just kind of making plays all over the field. He hits Hayden Hurst on a complete blown coverage from the Bills against play action, takes a shot, ends up being a little bit banged up after that game because of the shot he took. But the Ravens just bullied the Bills. They were able to really generate pass rush up front, got a ton of hits on Josh Allen, sacked him a few times, had him kind of seeing ghosts out there a little bit. And Stephon Diggs was not on that football field. They did not have the absolute weapon that separates that Allen can really rely on in a crucial situation to win a 50-50 ball, to go up and make plays. And the tight ends of the Bills have been incorporated more into their offense. They love to leak those out. They love to sneak them past you on play action. And we saw a little RPO pop pass from Brian Daboll, who's been one of the best play callers in the NFL. But they have a nice system in place passing-wise. They got Diggs, the true number one. They've got the slot receiver Cole Beasley, who is banged up right now, is really only running one route right now, but can still convert first downs and do things like that. They got John Brown and Gabe Davis working on the outside. Gabe Davis had a huge game against Indianapolis. So he's another target that you kind of forget about a little bit because of Diggs and Beasley and the other guys. But he makes plays, great body control, good speed, able to work downfield really well and hurt defenses. So they have a nice balanced passing attack. And with the Ravens defense coming together at the right time, hopefully it's able to kind of be balanced as well and go strength on strength in the secondary and then be able to beat the Bills up front, get a little pass rush and see what you can do. But if this game is played in the snow, all bets are off. Who the hell knows what's going to happen?
Yeah, you know, the snow, the wind, even the rain sometimes, it can make things quite difficult for offenses, for defenses. It just makes, you know, a lot of things not known because the weather, it can act up in crazy ways. We saw that against the New England Patriots when Baltimore played them and let literal monsoon on Baltimore's final possession. But Spencer, how do you think this game goes? Obviously, it's still early in the week. There's a lot to kind of go through and digest when it comes to Baltimore's new opponent here in the Bills. And based off of how the Ravens are playing, based off of how the Bills are playing, this should be a really good game. So how do you see this one going in the end?
You know, if the weather does affect this game, like I said, all bets are off. I would like to think that in a very basic world, the Ravens have an incredibly diverse rushing attack and tons of guys that can come downhill and make plays that way. Lamar Jackson has run well in some tough weather games. Seattle comes to mind. San Francisco comes to mind last year as well. The monsoon this year in New England was really difficult, but he played okay. I don't think Lamar Jackson was the reason the Ravens lost that game by any stretch of the imagination. But you think he's a little bit of a mutter. We also saw Bucks game his rookie year. He ran really effectively. So that kind of throws things out the window a bit. But I would like to say you want to rely on the Ravens to run the ball well there. For me, it just comes down to, can Josh Allen play at an MVP level? Can he beat the Ravens consistently? Is Stephon Diggs going to be able to make those contested catches? Are they going to be able to sneak guys out on this Ravens secondary that's been super disciplined as they are healthy and really starting to gel right now? It's all on Josh Allen, in my opinion. The Ravens have a diverse offense that has a little bit more run game balance and is able. I think the Ravens' pass game is stronger than the Bills' run game is the best way to put it. I think the Ravens are a little more balanced. While that might sound crazy in a way, they are. But it comes down to, can Josh Allen just elevate above and make the plays over and over? And can he consistently do it? Can the Ravens get him to make some bad decisions? Can you get the ball away from them, force a fumble or something of the sort on a catch that you do allow? Can Marlon Humphrey go hawk a ball out? Get a couple turnovers, and it really will thwart the Bills. The Colts gave them a tough time, especially late in the game, able to corral Allen in the backfield a couple times. And Allen does end up just coming out on top. And if the Ravens secondary plays the way that they did against the Titans, is able to stay in phase, make guys make contested catches, make guys be perfect all the time, then the Ravens should be able to walk away victorious, unless the snow just throws a complete monkey wrench. But I think it basically is kind of just like Josh Allen and the Bills offense against the Ravens, against the more balanced, expensive, kind of talented unit. And I think that the Ravens defense can present some problems up front. While the Bills offensive line, if you go back and watch that Indianapolis game in the wild card round from this past weekend, Josh Allen had all day to throw the ball. That was kind of the Colts strategy. Let him sit back there. We're going to drop into coverage, see if he can pick us apart. And he did. Took the easy throws, took the checkdowns. And like I mentioned about Lamar, that's the big thing. Moving the chains by taking the five-yard gains, taking the easy thing. So if you can force a turnover or two, get Josh Allen to press, who knows. But I think it's going to be a close game. I think it's going to be a hard-fought game. It was a close game last year. While the Ravens did kind of control the game for the most part, but Josh Allen was not on the same level that he is this year. So we shall see. It feels like the Ravens match up better with them than they do with the Titans. So we'll see how this one turns out.
Yeah, absolutely, Spencer. This should be a really close game. It should be a really good game. Obviously, weather pending, we don't know exactly what's going to happen with the weather. It's still rather early in the week to be making final predictions about that. But you mentioned it. Josh Allen is a much better player than he was a year ago. Lamar Jackson has seemingly evolved as well, at least over the last 5 weeks and into the playoffs. You know, these guys are learning. They have these experiences, and they both have grown tremendously. Allen has had the better season this year. Lamar Jackson is kind of second fiddle to him in that regard, but Lamar Jackson had the better year last season. So there are a lot of storylines going into this. Obviously, in the AFC, three of the remaining four quarterbacks are from that 2018 first-round quarterback class. So we'll see what ends up happening with this game, but I think at the end of the day, it's going to be a close, good game. But Spencer, that's all that I have for you today. Thank you so much for joining me here again today on the show. And when we get back here next week, hopefully we'll be talking about the Ravens going to the AFC Championship game, either traveling to Kansas City or hosting the game at M&T Bank Stadium against the Browns.
Absolutely. It was an honor. Thank you for having me on again, Kevin. Make sure to give Kevin 5 stars, and we'll see how each of these quarterbacks are playing their third playoff game. And it feels like whichever one wins will really propel the narratives, the old narratives forward, what everybody loves to talk about in the media. Whoever comes out on top of this game is going to be considered a really, really, really great quarterback, really great team, and it legitimizes their seasons. So it's going to be a classic, I think. And thanks again for having me on, Kevin, and I'll talk to you guys next week.
Absolutely, Spencer. Thanks again. That's all we have for you today. When we get back tomorrow, it is more Ravens talk here. We'll be answering your questions, comments, concerns, and other things with Cole Jackson of Russell Street Report. So stay tuned for that, and I will see you tomorrow.